response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
And another good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long here, introducing you. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us, by the way. Dan Burns is here. He is an ASC certified technician at Lloyd's Automotive, as all of you. You guys are all master technicians, are you not?
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of our program.
You kind of say, yeah, you got to be a master.
Well, you know, if you're gonna be in the game, you might as well have the documents that show that you're in the game. And you know, being an ASC certified technician does not make you a good mechanic, but if you're a good mechanic, you should be able to pass the tests.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're...
How often do you have to get kind of recertified?
5 years, in fact.
Every 5 years.
Mine are due this year, and of course, there's 9 different tests for me to take, and I'm thinking, I think getting too old for this.
You'd miss it.
I'll have to make one more run at it.
I think you should.
Yeah. And I just hope I can pass the tests. We'll see.
Are they tough? And how long are each one?
You know, the original tests when you're young and you take them for the first time, they're pretty difficult and they're pretty significant. The recertification when you are taking them, you know, to re-up,
right?
They tone them down just a little bit to make them a little bit more experience, you know, a level that would be appropriate with experience that you have in the field. On the first round, there's an awful lot of theory and an awful lot of stuff that you would have learned at school. The first round is pretty tough.
Is this all online testing?
No, they're at those test centers that you go to.
Oh, sure.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually kind of funny. You go into the test centers and they practically frisk you going through to make sure that you're not bringing any cheat cards in or anything. You have to raise up your pants
or wrenches.
Yeah, no, you can't take any note cards in with you.
You cannot.
No, so it's pretty serious.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
every 5 years.
Well, it's not that it makes you a better mechanic, but if you're a good mechanic, you should know enough.
That makes sense.
To get through them.
Putting it that way. Yeah. What have folks been bringing their vehicles in for? Because we haven't had any seriously cold weather.
You know that
as a rule,
we have not had any serious cold weather, which will come, and we can talk about that later. About that, you should be prepared for that and get ready for it before you get stuck out on the bitter cold morning and your car won't start. But you know, our suspension related stuff is starting to show up. There are plenty of potholes around.
Oh boy.
Already. And the roads have been terrible with ice and that sort of thing. So there's been plenty of slipping and sliding and damage stuff that's happening that way.
So we were talking about that last week.
Yeah, not too much cold stuff, but it'll come. That's for sure.
You know what I have to mention is the phone number and the text number, which is the same number. If you want to ask your car care question, if you need to bring in your vehicle to your favorite dealer, your favorite shop, Dan will give you some idea what might be ailing with that car, truck, or van. Call us or text Dan, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. I was thinking about vehicles. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine at lunch yesterday about leaving a car outside during this time. Is it, if you're going to leave a vehicle for an extent, maybe you're going to go to Florida for 3 months,
right?
And you don't have a place to store it, should you take that battery out, or can you leave a trickle charger on it outside?
You can leave a trickle charger
on it. And that would be okay.
Right. As long as the battery doesn't go dead, it will stay charged. As long as the battery doesn't go dead.
Now, that won't freeze.
It will not freeze, right?
Okay.
That's correct. As long as it stays charged. So if you leave a trickle charger on it, and whether it be in an unheated garage or outside, it will stay charged and it will keep it from going or from freezing. Of course, if you do let a battery freeze, that wrecks it.
It does, for sure.
Yeah, it wrecks it for sure. So don't let that happen. So if you don't have a trickle charger or you don't want to deal with that, then yes, you should take the battery out. Make sure that you store it in a well-ventilated place, the gases that come off a battery are actually explosive, so you would not want to put them in a
new.
Yeah, you would not want to put them in a confined area to store.
But what does that do to the vehicle itself, the computer's system? And when you're taking a battery out, everything goes blank, right?
Right, and everything will reboot when you...
Oh, it will.
It's like if you unplug your computer at home.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing. It will reboot. What you will lose is the clock and, you know, a bunch of all your presets on your radio and all that sort of thing that need to be reset. But no, I won't say that it won't change it, because it will. It certainly will rechange it. And when you reboot it, or when you reboot all the computers, you know, they come up and they start over and they have to recalculate the things that they've learned in history. But that'll be fine. The car will catch up to that, and it will relearn everything that it needs to know.
Again, if you want to ask Dan Burns your car care question, by all means, you can call it in, chat with Dan, or text Dan that question. Same number, 651-989-9226. I failed to mention that Dan's going to be here only till about 7:45, so don't wait to ask him a question. He'd be glad to help you out. But give us a call. Don't wait. Dan will be here till about 7:45 or so. Here's a text, Dan. 2008 VW Rabbit, slight clicking from the front wheels when turning. Could this be dangerous?
It could be could be dangerous, certainly. Usually when you're hearing a clicking from one of the front wheels when you're turning, it's usually the drive axle, and there's a fancy universal joint in there, and when that goes bad, when the bearings in that go bad, they have a tendency to click when you're turning, and they will click for a while, and then eventually they'll break. And if the drive axle itself actually breaks, then you're stuck in the water. It's the car will not pull itself and won't go anywhere. So don't let that clicking go on too long without taking it in. And
is that a big job to repair too?
You know, no. You
not
know
really.
We used to rebuild them. We used to put new boots on them, you know, take them apart. But with labor costs getting to be what they are, and the parts prices on things like this have actually gone down. So most commonly, we just would replace.
Just replace it.
Replace the axle, yeah.
All right, very good. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Bob is there. Bob is calling from Egan, I believe. Bob, you're on with Dan.
Hi.
Morning.
Morning. I got a question on a deep cell battery. I took them out at a pole barn up at the cabin. Where can I store them in the cabin so it's not explosive or hazardous?
Well, like if you can store them in a closet or something like that, and just make sure that there's some air, some ventilation that happens around it. You know, don't put them in a small closet and close the door tight. Or something
okay.
like that. Leave the door ajar a little bit, and you know, just let a little air circulate around them. I'm being a little bit, I'm overdoing a little bit by saying that it puts off explosive gases, but it's true. But it would take a pretty small confined area for that to happen. But if you're going to put them in a closet or something, just leave the door ajar a little bit, and it should be fine.
All right, very good. Thanks, Bob. Bob leaves that line open for your car care question for Dan Burns, 651-989-9226. Again, that's the same number to use for your text questions, if that's easier. Here's another one, text green, 2009 Ram. Dampers in climate control system are extremely slow to move, excuse me, if they move at all. Is it expensive to fix? Do you have to rip the whole dash apart?
You know, usually not. In this case, the fact that they move at all, And that's a good sign. The doors inside the heater box are most commonly moved nowadays with a little electric servo motor. And if that motor, like any electric motor, is getting weak, you know, they'll try for a long time to move, and eventually sometimes they'll actually get the door to move, but as they've gotten weak, they are having trouble doing that as they've gotten older. So that, but most of those servo motors are on the outside of the heater box, which is good news for you. Usually we can access them without removing too much stuff and get at them, and then just simply put in a new motor, plug it in, and you're back in business. So if you're having trouble with where they're moving way too slow, then be comfortable knowing that it does not require taking the whole dash apart.
All right, very good. Dan, we need to take a quick break, so hang on. If you have any kind of a car care question you want to talk to Dan Burns, call it in or text it in, 651-989-9226. Denny Law here with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive, which is located, let's ask Dan. He knows, well, so do I, but where are you located there on beautiful Grand Avenue?
It is beautiful Grand Avenue, still decorated a little bit for the holidays.
All right.
So that's kind of nice. It's pretty. Great place to shop. But we are at 982 Grand Avenue, which is kind of right in the heart of it. We are between Lexington and Victoria on Grand Avenue. You can find us on the web at LloydsAutomotive.net, LLOYDS, LloydsAutomotive.net. Or give us a call, 651-228-1316. Nick will be there this morning.
Oh, so, all right, so Nick will be there till, what, noon?
Yeah, till noon today, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get you that number before Dan leaves us today. But by the way, Dan will be leaving us in about 7:45. So if you have any kind of a car care question, you don't have to be a motorhead to call into the show. Call us or text us, same number, 651-989-9226. If you got to bring in your vehicle and you want to know what could be wrong with it, call us or text us. Let's go back to the phones. Dan, Dave is calling from South St. Paul. Dave, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Good. Say, I'm calling, Dan. I've got a 2005 Honda Accord that the air conditioning went bad this summer, so I had to put a new compressor in. Mm-hmm. And now I've noticed in the colder weather that particularly if I'm just sitting at a light or it's idling, whenever the heat kicks on, you know, the fan will be running, but you can tell the compressor kicks on, my idle goes way down, and it runs pretty rough. And then as soon as it shuts off, everything's fine. I'm wondering if it's a sign of a bad compressor or I did something wrong when I put it in or...
No, the old compressor wasn't working, of course, so you didn't notice that the compressor had a significant effect on the engine.
And
it will. So I think what's really happened here is you got the compressor back working the way that it should. It should cycle like that. But when it does, the idle should adjust accordingly. The idle should be, the computer should be seeing the AC compressor turn off, and it should be turning up the idle a little bit. And it does that with an air control motor to control the idle speed control motor to control the idle. And if that gets either stops working, you know, it's an electric motor, if that motor stops working completely, or if the passageway that allows air to get through, if that's gotten plugged with carbon and stuff, then, of course, the motor isn't capable of working even if it does move. So something like that is going on at any rate. I think the compressor is working just fine. The idle speed needs to be able to keep up with the compressor in order to work properly. So check out your idle speed. I think the AC compressor is great.
All right, good. Thank you, Dave. Again, this morning, call or text Dan. Your question, same number, 651-989-9226. Let's grab a text here while we're talking about it. And it says this, I just had my left caliper replaced due to a leak. Can my brakes be adjusted so the pedal doesn't go so close to the floor? I prefer my brake pedal to press sooner.
Well, if you had the caliper replaced because of a leak, first thing you should do is bleed the whole rest of the brake system. If any air got in there, then the pedal will go to the floor.
Oh, that's the deal.
It takes way less pressure to compress air than it does to compress hydraulic fluid. And so that's what's going on. If you have a little bit of air in there, the pedal will go to the floor. So bleed the whole brake system first, and then in most cases, I didn't hear what kind of car that was, but in most cases, the brakes are self-adjusting. Even if it has four-wheel disc brakes, they're self-adjusting. There is no adjustment to it.
Oh, is that true? You know, oh, okay.
If it has rear drum brakes, then sometimes they can be adjusted, but even in that case, they should have automatic adjusting that takes place in them.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Dominic's calling from Plymouth, I believe. Dominic, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Don. I have a question. I've got a Chrysler Aspen 2007. It's got 165,000 miles, and I seem to be putting in a quart of oil every five fill-ups or so, and sometimes I let it go a little bit lower, and the oil light would come on. I'm just wondering, is there anything I should really be concerned about there? And then I have one more question. My blower motor only works on the two high speeds, and I'm just wondering if it's a job I could do myself.
Ah, two answers. First off, if you've got 165,000 miles on your Chrysler and you're putting a little bit of oil in it once in a while, that's just fine. You're not going to spend the money that it would take to go after that problem and solve it. If it's not leaking externally, and it probably is a little bit, but if it's burning a little bit of oil with that many miles on it, that's just fine. Let that go. And as far as your heater only working on two speeds, it's probably the blower motor resistor. And yes, oftentimes you can replace that yourself. It's usually behind the glove box area, and it'll be two little screws that hold the device into the heater box itself. There'll be several wires going to it, and you go buy one, look at it, so you see what you're looking for on the heater box. You'll find it, and then take those two little screws off, put the new one in, and plug it in, and you'll be in business.
How about that?
That's all there is to it. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Dominic. Thanks for the call. And Dominic leaves that line open, 651-989-9226. Tim, I believe, is calling from Henderson this morning.
Yes, good morning. I really love your show.
Thank you.
I got a question. I got a 1996 Jeep Grand Cherokee with the 5.2. It's got the 4-speed automatic in it, and it's got 150,000 on it. It really runs good. Tranny always shifted really good. On Christmas Eve, I was going to my sister's. All of a sudden, I'm going down the road at road speed. It acted like it was in neutral. You know, it should have been a fourth, and then I slowed down. I thought, what's going on here? And I got, and then it shifted good, and then I got going, and then I thought, geez, I better stop and check the tranny fluid once. So I stopped and checked the tranny fluid, and that looked good. It, you know, it looked nice and clean and pretty, and it smelled really good, you know, because I a lot of times like to smell it. You know, you can tell if it's getting burnt or whatever, and got in there and started driving some more, and all of a sudden it wouldn't shift at all. So I pulled over in the shoulder, and it would only go first and second, and then all of a sudden it was just like it was in neutral. So then I checked the tranny fluid again, and then now it smells kind of burnt, like kind of like a clutch, mm-hmm. you know, or a brake or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit dirty. And I thought, geez, what's going on here? You know, it was shifting just perfect, and then all of a sudden, this. So I had to get the thing towed, and it was Christmas Eve. I was on my way to my sister's, and I just thought, boy, what a night.
Well, what do you think, Dan? What do you think?
Well, if you're familiar with that clutch smell, and that's what you're smelling in the transmission fluid, that's not a good sign. If it's full of fluid, and the vehicle's no longer pulling itself. Yes, there is clutch material in an automatic transmission, and when it starts to slip and fail, it'll get that smell in the fluid. And for any of us that are in the business, that's a common smell. We know what that smell.
It's
a terrible smell.
Is
actually
it?
Yeah. And maybe it's a terrible smell because we know what it's leading to, that the transmission's done for. But it sounds to me like if you've checked the fluid, it's full of fluid and it's no longer working. And if you've shut the vehicle off, restarted it, and tried it again, and it's no longer pulling itself, then it sounds like the transmission has probably failed and it's going to need to be overhauled.
Mm. You see that often these days?
Yeah,
we still do
quite a few transmissions. Yep, it's pretty common. You know, the vehicles are so expensive, and they last so long, and so it makes sense oftentimes, even if it's a $5,000 repair, people will decide to do it because the rest of the car is still in really good shape, and it's worth the repair.
And they like it.
When you're making a major decision on a car that you like and that you're used to driving, I'll just ask the question, well, you know, if the repair is going to be $5,000, and I'll ask the question, well, if you could buy that car for $5,000, would you? And if the answer is yes, then you might as well fix it.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty easy sale when I put it that way.
All right, tell you what, Dan's going to be with us for about another 15 minutes, so don't wait. If you want to call in or text in your car care question, by all means, 651-989-9226. And we're back at it, our CCO Car Care Show. Denny Law here. with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive. Dan, we have a busy morning here. We put you to work real fast because callers have filled the lines, and we have a lot of text messages as well. But Tim wanted to have a follow-up there about, Tim, what you wanted to know about adjusting the bands?
Yeah, good morning there. This is Tim calling you back. Yeah, that was the question I had. I did some research on the tranny, and that's it's got the 42RE tranny in it, and they put them in Dodge pickups too, and it said in there that those bands are adjustable, and you should have adjusted them at 75,000. I bought that Jeep for my brother-in-law, and I called him, and he said he's never had them adjusted when he had it, and he bought it new. So it's got 150,000 on it now, and the bands have never been adjusted. And I was wondering if I adjusted them, if that could solve my problem for a little while.
Well, it could, but it would be a long shot. I'll tell you that if it's been slipping long enough to where you're smelling burnt, where it's been hot enough where you're smelling burnt material, then you know there's probably more wrong with the transmission. And most commonly, if for a transmission to stop completely and stop pulling itself the way yours has, it's something bigger than the bands going out of adjustment. And frankly, I've never fixed one or been able to fix a vehicle by simply adjusting the band. Usually when something fails, it's a seal in the transmission or the servo in the transmission or something like that. So rarely, in fact, never in my world, but rarely would you be able to repair a failed transmission simply by making an adjustment.
It's on the bands.
Yeah, and just let me just finish. One last thought on that is the process of taking a transmission in and out and dealing all of that, they're so complicated that's why if you bring a car into a shop with a bad transmission or with your transmission acting up, rarely are they going to be comfortable just doing a repair on it. They're going to want to say, well, there's a lot of miles on it, and all of the parts in there are worn. I'm not going to, you know, take a whole bunch of money of yours and just take it apart, replace one part, and put it back together. Usually they're going to want to do a complete overhaul on it.
Makes sense.
That's just, it makes sense, and it's good business.
All right. Hope that helped, Tim. Back to the phones we go. Steve is calling from Shoreview. Steve, what is your question?
I've got a 2015 Toyota Highlander six-cylinder. Maintenance required light is going on. I've tried to turn it off, you know, by pushing the button as you start the car up, and also disconnect the battery. It won't go away. Thoughts?
Well, there's a procedure. if you look it up on the internet or something, you'll find it. I can do it. I'm not sure I can always explain it, but on a Toyota Highlander, usually you have to turn the key on, get it set on the A trip thing, then turn the key back on, push the trip reset button while you're turning the key on, and then the light will flash several times and it'll reset. Sometimes it's not the A trip. Sometimes it's the odometer itself. And it, you know, on different vehicles and different ages, the setup is a little bit different, but basically it's the same thing. And what you're trying to do, somehow you're doing the sequence just a little bit wrong. And if you do it just a little bit wrong, it won't work. So check your sequence again, read it carefully, and do it exactly the way they say. And that'll take care of it. And if that doesn't work, stop by any shop, really, and they'll be glad to do that for you for free. It takes like 10 seconds. Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
Super quick.
Very good. Thank you, Steve. Texter says this, 2012 Toyota, 120,000 miles, V6, due for spark plugs. Should the O2 sensors be replaced at the same time?
You know, we don't replace O2 sensors for maintenance, and not many manufacturers recommend that. So I would say no. If they're working fine, there's no reason to replace them, and oftentimes they're pretty expensive. So I would not just change those for maintenance purposes.
Okay. Jim is calling in from iSanity this morning. Jim, you're on CCO with Dan.
Oh, good morning, Dan. Do you have an instance ever happen where a Chrysler product, four-cylinder and V6, uses a huge amount of oil, and they don't smoke, of course, because the catalytic converter would keep that from happening, but there's a large oil consumption problem. I'm talking about big time, like probably 100 miles to a quart, you know?
Yeah. Yes, to answer your question, yes, we have seen that, and there's lots of things that could cause it. For example, if you have an intake manifold leak, there's an oil passage that goes through there where the oil can actually be running directly into the intake and, of course, burning through it like that. So I would absolutely recommend that you take that in and have it checked, because there's a good chance that it's not a mechanical problem. If the engine still runs good and you're not hearing any noise, it probably mechanically won't consume that kind of oil. It won't blow that quantity of oil past the rings or anything like that. So I think more likely what's happening is it's going through the intake, and that's a much more affordable repair and probably makes sense to have it repaired. And one thing, I would do that soon, because running that much oil through the catalytic converter, you're going to wreck it.
Oh, yeah. That's what, they're expensive.
Yeah, that's not good for it.
All right, Jim, take one more call. Bill is calling from Monticello. Bill, you're on with Dan.
Well, thanks, guys. Say, Dan, I've got a 2013 Chrysler 200. It's been a good car. I got about 199,000 miles on it. And I've noticed lately that every so often, after the car's been sitting for a while overnight or during the day, and I get in the car, start it up, put it in drive, I start to drive off, I get about 30 miles an hour, I notice the RPM needle's jumping from 2 to 3 to 4, and the car sounds like it's, the engine sounds like it's racing, and it doesn't feel like it's getting into gear. I pull it over, turn the car off, start it up again, drive off, and it's fine. Do you think that's a computer issue, or is it something more serious with the transmission?
No, I do think it's something electronic related, not necessarily the computer itself, but maybe one of the solenoids that the computer controls. And as we were talking earlier in the show, you pull over, turn the key off, start the car again. The car automatically, with all of the computer, goes through a self-test and make sure that the car is ready to go. In the process of the transmission computer doing that, it's obviously resetting something and makes it happy again, and you're back in business. So I think probably if you were willing to bring that into a shop and have it checked, if they checked for codes in the transmission computer, they'd find some information related to this, and that would give you and them an idea as to what you should do to repair that if it continues to happen. I think the information's probably stored. If it's not working right, it'll set a code, and the code will be stored there for you.
That's it for the phone calls. We handled all those, but we're not going to get through all the text messages, and we'll grab a couple here before we leave. But let's do the show next week, and we'll start with those.
That sounds like a great idea. I'm glad we're popular.
No, yes, it's a busy day this morning.
Yeah.
Texter says this, then we have to let you go. I have a 2014 BMW with a tire pressure monitoring system, and I'm wondering how accurate that is, because when I put my digital tire inflator on, they are slightly different.
Well, I've talked about air pressure before, and if I use two different gauges at the shop, they're slightly different. So it's a little bit of a moving target. They're all within a very, small range. But if you check tires, under different conditions and so forth, they're different. But I think that if you want to use the sensors that are in your tires and use that as your guide as to where you're going to inflate the tires to, I think it's just fine. I think you're close enough.
You'd be close enough.
Wherever you want to be and be happy with that. But actually, I think those sensors in the tires are quite accurate.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think they are.
All right. Here's a text. I have an 08 Lexus, and I just changed the battery. But for some reason, the alarm keeps going off and does not shut off quickly with the remote. What should I do?
Well, I would disconnect the battery again and reconnect the battery and see if that changes things for you. Oftentimes it will. you know, the process of the battery going dead, the alarm got unhappy, and sometimes if you just disconnect the battery, hook it up again, it'll come back and be happy.
Okay, there's another text that kind of goes on, and I don't think we're going to have time for that. That one, I'll save that for next week.
Okay.
My power steering stopped working 2 days ago on my 2012 Ford Escape. I called my local mechanic for advice, as I try to do as many of my own repairs as possible. He said if the reservoir is full, there's no signs of leaking, that it could be a bad battery. Did I jump to the wrong? I'll tell you what, we're going to save this till next week.
Yeah.
I'll straighten this out because, as you know, looking at the text screen, people send texts and it's multiple and they're not necessarily in the order.
Well, just quickly, I'll just refer to that.
Sure.
Nowadays, there's two different things that there's hydraulic power steering and there's electronic power steering. Yes, power steering racks are electric now, a lot of them. And so but they're not, they're one or the other. They're not both. So if you have a fluid system, then you do not have an electric system, and the battery would have nothing to do with it.
All right, we'll sort all of this out.
All right,
and
that sounds good.
Invite our listeners to join us again next week as we'll pick up on all these text messages we didn't get to, and of course we'll grab more of your phone calls as well. Dan, for those that might want to come over and see you guys at Lloyd's Automotive, you are open, we said, till noon today.
We are. Yeah, we're open most Saturdays till noon. We close on the holiday ones, but we're open most Saturdays. You can give us a call at 651-228-1316. You can come over. We are at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul, or you can find a lot about us on the web at LloydsAutomotive.net, L-L-O-I-D-S, LloydsAutomotive.net.
And I do believe you're on Facebook as well.
I think so, too.
All of that.
I'm not sure how to find that.
Well, I find it all the time.
Okay.
All right, Dan, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
More car care next week here on News Talk A30WCCO.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.